The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz hosts a radio show in Seattle, and he has, as always, the details for us exclusively.
Jason Rantz, our Seattle guy, is with us now.
Jason Rantz, always great to have you in focus. Thank you.
Hey, Jason, I think you're all right, and thanks for being on the show.
An update on what's happening in your Pacific Northwest.
We'll take you through the implications of former President Trump's indictment we believe will happen tomorrow. State Representative Skylar Rood is saying, hey, why don't we actually work to fix the damage done to kids thanks to the COVID policies? Plus, residents are taking matters into their own hands in Grant County when it comes to pursuing people who steal their belongings. Well, sheriff's deputies aren't able to, but turns out there are a lot of residents who think they're able to. Grant County Sheriff Joe Crete joins me. We're going to get to those stories and so much more this hour of the Jason Rantz Show. So let's dive in.
The monologue.
Alexa works in Ballard, neighborhood in Seattle. And while she was at work this morning around 9:30 or so, she knew something had gone wrong.
I was actually in a meeting for work downstairs, and then we heard about 5 or 6 gunshots. About a minute later, just a massive amount of sirens.
A King County Sheriff's detective was shot while serving an eviction notice. He was there with 2 others. It's usual policy to go with 2 or 3 people when serving with eviction notices. We were at a point in this particular case where it was the end of the process to evict. The process started in January. And he was there. He ends up getting shot. In fact, gunfire was exchanged. Now, as of 2:30 this afternoon, we were told that he was in surgery, that he actually got to the hospital in good spirits, and he is expected to survive. I believe the wound was through the shoulder. It was in and out. Bellevue Police PIO Megan Black took the lead. She said this.
The detectives with the King County Sheriff's Civil Division was approaching this unit to serve an eviction notice. On initial contact, there was gunfire exchanged. At this point in time, we're trying to figure out who shot first and what happened. And that's why the detectives are on scene processing the scene right now.
So there are some questions still not answered. We can tell you that this detective who was shot is a veteran of the King County Sheriff's Office, or at least in law enforcement, 25 years. The partners he was there with, one is a 23-year vet. Another one was a 26-year vet. After the exchange of gunfire, we're told that the individual suspect who was to be evicted ended up barricading himself in the home. He's a 29-year-old male. The way this conversation has been going and details trickling out makes it kind of seem like he's homeless and almost like a squatter. I don't know if that's the case, but there's been some pretty bizarre conversations around this guy. And we're waiting to get more details on who he is. But apparently, while this was over, because he ended up dying, they found his body. We don't know if it was a self-inflicted wound. We don't know if he was shot by deputies and a detective returning fire, although they said the detective didn't actually use his firearm. Did the person get shot and then go in, barricade himself, and then die from the wound? We just don't know. But a friend had shown up, and they didn't identify. It was a woman. She didn't identify herself. But she spoke to the media and said that this was basically the fault of the sheriff's department because they shouldn't be evicting people.
I would like the community and the politicians and the landlords motivated by profit at the expense of human life to
just real quickly, I assuming she is a friend, close or not, I guess she's going to be emotional. She sounds like a crazy activist. Sorry. She's saying patently ridiculous things. This is about money. You don't have the right to live in an apartment that you don't own for as long as you want. You don't have that right. Now, we don't know the details of this eviction, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say rent was not paid. You don't have the right to free housing. You might think housing is a human right. Then you could have housed him. You could have stepped up. but you do not have a right to live in an apartment rent-free. You don't have a right to destroy property that's not yours. Whatever the reason is behind this eviction, understand how difficult it is to get evicted in Washington State. You have to go through a long process, and you have to have everything in order. And whomever is the owner of the property had everything in order.
Recognize the fact that hundreds of homeless people die on Seattle's streets annually, and the King County Sheriff bears at least some responsibility for evicting those people in the first place.
So they don't bear any responsibility. The only person who bears responsibility is the person to be evicted, who owed, I'm told, $13,000 in back pay. $13,000. That's not $13. That's not even $1,300. Where a landlord generally is going to work with you. They don't want to have to put a home back on the market. Not even in Seattle. It's just a hassle. They don't want to have to go through with that if they can actually get you to pay. $13,000? Yeah. That's months and months and months of not paying. And you have the audacity. I don't care that your friend died, but you have the audacity to come out and say what you just said after you know a deputy was shot. And at the time, we were told by Harborview that it was serious condition. You got to have some sympathy for that person. The same way I think most people have sympathy for the guy who was shot, because no one wants to see that happen. We'd prefer that not end that way. Law enforcement officers, regardless of where they work, they don't want to shoot and kill anyone. So they're also going to have to deal with this emotionally. For her to blame the sheriff's, shame on you. But she brings up a point that I do think is important to understand. Does this not sound like the kind of action that we're told police shouldn't be involved in? Send a social worker. Okay. We were told to send a social worker to Charlena Lyles, not a cop. Had we done that, we would have a dead social worker. Had we sent a social worker here, because I'm going to assume that it was not the police who shot first. Unless, of course, the guy pulled out a gun and pointed it at them and then guaranteeing that they will fire first. But all of this was the result of the evictee, who would have likely pulled the exact same stunt on a social worker who would not have been armed. Or a group of social workers who not only would not have been armed, but might not have had people next to them with training. Meaning other social workers. We might be sending these people to their deaths. And we're talking about doing this. It's going to happen in Seattle. It's going to happen in Pierce County. Except at least in Pierce County, they're going to have a deputy along with them. But know that the direction that we're going in, if we were there right now, if we were doing exactly what folks on the left want us to do, we would have sent social workers there to evict this guy. And we might have three dead bodies on our hands. Four. No, it wouldn't even be four. It would definitely be three. I'm assuming, again, they're not going to be armed. So think about that. Think about that. Now, thankfully, it sounds like this detective is going to be okay. All of the information that we've received so far suggests that. This could have ended in a much worse way. But because we had trained deputies there, there was minimal damage done. By minimal, I'm meaning to them. Because when you pull a gun and fire at deputies, that's on you. And I frankly don't care what happens at that point.
The interview.
Former President Donald Trump seems to believe he's going to be arrested tomorrow in Manhattan, thanks to Alvin Bragg, a DA who doesn't generally go after criminals, period. He doesn't charge for misdemeanors. He almost never charges for felonies, or he downplays them. In this case, we've got misdemeanor charges that seem like they're going to be elevated to a felony, resurrecting an attempt that the federal government gave up on. Alex Hoff is with Fox News, and she joins me to discuss. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
You know, I polluted the well a little bit in that introduction. You know exactly where I stand on it, but clearly there are political implications here, correct?
Yeah, correct. And I think you did a very good job, because Alvin Bragg is going to have to get very creative to make this make sense to a lot of people. Their viewers at home, no matter what side of the political aisle they fall on, I think are going to look at these possible charges and see them as convoluted, wonder, would I be held to the same standard? And then ask themselves, the standard is already especially high for somebody who is a former sitting president. Mm-hmm. Does Donald Trump deserve this?
That position is contingent on the media covering this honestly. Fox News will cover it honestly. We'll cover it honestly. But do you get the sense that MSNBC or CNN or the New York Times will connect the dots to Alvin Bragg's past lack of interest in pursuing certain crimes and what's going on here?
Well, I think if the tone is not celebratory, I think it will be hard not to convey how complicated the process must have been for the Manhattan District Attorney's Office to pursue charges that federal authorities would not. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be hard to shield your viewers from. As I said, as long as the tone is not celebratory in this, because you have, even on the legislative side, you have Democrats Mark Kelly saying, really, Alvin Bragg's got to have the goods here, or else this really does look like a political stunt in so many ways.
Yeah, and even if he had all the goods, as it were, if he ends up getting off, it doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, people will believe, rightly so, that this was a political hit job.
Yeah, and that can do a lot of damage. You know, I do know some Democrats who are saying, at first, I think we're a little excited by this. Mm-hmm. They saw the headlines, and then started thinking about it and said, well, wait a minute, you know, if the meat to this doesn't stick, you now potentially have a mugshot that people will want to wear in a t-shirt. And I don't like that. So that's coming from some of my Democratic friends.
Yeah. Now, and this has an impact on the race as well. John Bolton, former ambassador, made the point, I think this morning, maybe yesterday, that if they go through with this and Trump is exonerated, you just guaranteed his reelection.
Yeah, and it becomes hard for his political opponents to speak out against him, at least in this realm, because they're mm-hmm. being forced to come to his defense right now. We heard it from Governor DeSantis today, somewhat so. He issued some pretty strong words. But yeah, I think something, an interesting development that came out this afternoon, when it comes to potentially theatrics that could occur tomorrow, potentially that's what Alvin Bragg might have been seeking in the first place. But a source told Fox News today that in the event of an indictment, that the Secret Service would actually suggest a virtual arraignment. Not nearly as exciting. I know that from covering crime for a long time. But that would be in the effort of avoiding danger and hysteria.
Yeah, it all depends on what Bragg wants to do. Do they want the perp walk? Do they want to release images to further, in their view, humiliate Trump? I don't think he finds himself humiliated by this. Certainly doesn't act like it, and I can't imagine he will.
Yeah. The Truth Social posts, they stood out to me. I mean, they were in all caps, so they would anyway. But yeah, I think this is going to lend into a conversation that the former president wants to have anyway, because eventually mm-hmm. this is going to be a conversation about crime for Alvin Bragg. And how many hours have you put into this pursuit when you have people, taxpayers in New York City, or wondering what's happened to their ability to walk around their neighborhood?
Do you think he's capable of answering that question? Like, what could possibly be a response to that very valid concern? Even if you think that Donald Trump is the guiltiest person in the history of humanity, and you want him to go to jail for this, even just a felony, a felony E charge, you still have to acknowledge the fact that he doesn't charge, and we know that.
Mm. That's such a good question. I think it would be, I don't know if he would even care to answer the question. I think he may be concerned with the people who he considers his base.
Mm-hmm.
The social justice warriors, they want to see the big man brought down.
Yeah.
So I don't know. He might stick to this. No one's above the law. Talking points that we're hearing a lot from the left. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I've heard Alvin Bragg really respond to the crime play happening in New York City.
So then, last question for you, just on the political front. How does this impact Ron DeSantis and his, I'm assuming, inevitable announcement that he's running for president? He's been, I think, playing it very, very smartly in that He doesn't attack Trump. Every once in a while, he'll respond sort of to a claim that's made, but he's still been hyper-focused on his results. And I imagine this might be seen as sort of a Judas moment for him from Trump's base, which you need to win over.
Yeah, I took his statement where he said today that he is not going to get involved in any way. I took it as a strong statement. I know maybe not everybody would, that he wouldn't help facilitate the former president being more easily taken into custody, which I don't know that he would have a whole lot involved in anyway. I think it's going to complicate things because the spotlight is off of him. But in some ways this week, that might have been a good thing. He was getting a lot of heat for some comments on Ukraine. But I think in the most basic sense, it's going to be Governor Ron DeSantis trying to win back some of the excitement that the Trump base might be feeling for the former president right now.
Yeah, not going to be easy for him. We've been talking with Alex Hoff of Fox News. Thank you so much for stopping by, as always. Really appreciate it.
Jason, thanks for having me.
Now this.
The interview.
In a brand new editorial, State Representative Skylar Rood says we could be doing a lot more. We should be doing a lot more to help children, students who suffered some significant setbacks during the COVID policy that shut down so many schools. The piece is in the Walla Walla Union Bulletin, and State Representative Rood joins me now. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
There's no question all the data shows us definitively that kids suffered emotionally, physically, and academically as a result of the closed schools. What are you suggesting?
It's not really a surprise to me. I think when the governor was shutting down schools, I think that was a concern from many of us that it would impact learning in a negative way. And we've seen less reporting of childhood abuse, so it's even more expansive than just education. So I have, there's actually a bill sponsored by Senator Braun, and then I ran a companion to direct excess federal dollars to tutoring programs and extended school days. So trying to catch up on the lost classroom time and get these kids back where they need to be.
The tutoring aspect of this makes perfect sense. I would say so does the scheduling, but I do wonder, are teacher unions going to be okay with that?
That's a great question. The bill didn't get that far. So I suspect school staff are willing to do a lot of things for additional pay. But I always keep in the back of my mind that average teacher pay in the state is $94,000 a year. So with summer breaks off. So,
well, you're not supposed to say that. You were supposed to pretend that it's like $40,000 for a teacher in Seattle who can't live anywhere within a 100-mile radius of the city because it's so expensive to live here.
Right, and that's certainly not to diminish anything that teachers do.
Sure.
Providing valuable services, but a lot of them are getting paid well. Some of them, maybe not so much, but overall, teachers are paid and compensated well. In absence of this bill, I'm hoping to run a budget amendment to provide additional support for tutoring programs. We did have that as part of our budget a couple of years ago. So there's already precedent to do that, and I'd like to make sure that we're directing some funds into tutoring.
Well, what have Democrats said?
I submitted my budget request. I haven't had conversations with them directly. I've talked to OSPI in gathering data on the existing funds, and they did run out of funds. They've all been allocated, so that there is room to do that. And I suspect that my Democratic colleagues are going to support that as well. To what extent? Is it going to be a couple million? Is it going to be tens of millions? We'll find out.
Well, how much do you think is absolutely necessary for, or what's the bottom line in what you would need to make this a success?
I don't have a specific dollar amount. I would rely on OSPI to try to estimate, but that would rely on their data, how many school districts had requested dollars and weren't able to get it. But then, of course, when people know that there aren't funds, they stop applying. So I'd like to get 5 to 10 in there as a starting place.
What does it tell you about the fact that there are so many districts around the state that are seeing dwindling numbers of enrollment. You have just here on the west side of the state, Seattle Public Schools, they're going to let some folks go. They might shut down schools. Bellevue just shut down two schools. We know in the city of Kent, they are concerned about their budgeting. What does that tell you about the past couple years?
I think it gives an indication that teachers, or I'm sorry, parents and guardians are experiencing some discomfort sending their kids to our public schools, which is concerning. We've had controversial bills passed through the legislature in recent years that generated a lot of pushback from the public, especially mm-hmm. parents. The comprehensive sexual health education is something that Republicans tried to work with the Democratic sponsors on in getting a bipartisan bill because we acknowledged the importance of providing that, but it needs to be age appropriate, and we just didn't have we weren't comfortable that the bill provided those kind of protections. So I think the sex ed bill is something that created a lot of discomfort. Vaccine mandates are something that I hear about. We recently removed the philosophical exemption for the MMR vaccine. Mm-hmm. That was something that I strongly objected to.
Yeah, so people noticed.
Yeah, it's not any one thing necessarily in my view, but they kind of add up to a place where parents don't feel like they have a lot of control over what their kids are being taught. One of my bills requires school board meetings to be recorded, and that is moving through the legislative process and looks like it will become law to provide more transparency to teachers on how the decisions are being made. There's not really easy access to school curriculum for parents to review. So I think it just all adds up to a place where parents are feeling less comfortable and looking toward alternatives that might include private school or homeschooling.
Yeah, there are a lot of parents who decided to sacrifice a little bit more to send their kids to private school after they realized that the schools, or at least the unions, did not necessarily have their kids' best interests at heart. To your point, there are a lot of teachers, most teachers do amazing work, but they are represented by unions that don't do such amazing work. And there are a number of educators more and more that are sort of leaning into this woke nonsense that I do think is pushing people away. We've been talking with State Representative Skylar Rood. Best of luck on this budgeting effort. We wish you the best.
Thank you, Jason.
You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
The Jason Rant Show.
Here to react, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rant.
And the rise of soft on crime laws and policies have made it worse.
Our man in the Pacific Northwest, Jason Rant, is on that.
And you keep on bringing us these extraordinary stories from Seattle. It's amazing.
Long form.
A very significant catalytic converter bust out in Grant County. Joining me on the line to discuss is Sheriff Joe Crete. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So you guys caught some folks in a pretty significant catalytic converter seizure. Take us through what happened.
Yeah, this has been an investigation that's been going on for roughly between 7 and 9 months here in Grant County and then reached down over into Franklin County. This has been a long investigation and several victims through the county have we've had a lot of catalytic converter thefts here in the county, and we just knew we had to do something about it. It was running rapid, and when you start reaching into other counties, we had information that's where they were going to, and it pretty much just got a lot of traction all at once, and it just exploded to our detectives. They spent long, hard hours of trying to track down these catalytic converters. We ended up seizing 533 of them.
Wow.
That's just a substantial number of catalytic converters. And, you know, the tough part is being able to track those things mm-hmm. down and pinpoint it back to a specific car. That begins to be the hard part. But, it's still an active investigation. They're still doing a whole bunch of work on this case. But I'll tell you, they've really, really worked hard. Like I said, this past 7 to 9 months and really developed into a great, great case that they're working. So,
yeah, and there are a lot of folks involved, it looks like, in this, including the Tri-Cities Drug Task Force, Benton County Sheriffs, Kennewick and Pasco Police Departments, along with the Washington State Patrol. So this is the kind of, to your point, it takes months and months and months. It takes these many people just because of how complex it is. How difficult is it to prove that a catalytic converter was stolen, given the fact that they don't have, generally, they don't have any sort of indication physically that they are stolen?
Yeah. So the first part is you know, the citizen or the person, the victim in this case, they're going to realize their catalytic converter is stolen by the sound of their car. They're going to realize it right off the bat. But as far as on the law enforcement side of things, the tough part is catalytic converters don't have a VIN number like mm-hmm. your car does, okay, to come back to a specific vehicle. They have basically a part number, I believe, is kind of the best way to explain it. Of course, I'm no mechanic, but the way I understand, the number basically comes back to the type of car it would belong to. And at that point, you know, you basically have to forensically match the cut marks from that catalytic converter to the vehicle you may suspect is a victim vehicle, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
to really pinpoint it down to the actual, this catalytic converter belongs to victim A. So it's a tough process.
Yeah.
It is a very difficult process for sure. You know, a lot of times we'll have to, you know, cut even a smaller portion of the exhaust that's left on that car to send it off to the crime lab to really make sure we get it forensically matched to the cut marks that were under that car.
So who's responsible for purchasing and or stealing these catalytic converters? Is there a connection between the business purchasing them and the individual selling it? Is there a direct connection, or are there two separate crimes here?
I think you're going to have two separate crimes here. I don't know specifically at this point with the investigation that's going on with our detectives that they're working, if they've actually pinpointed at that specifically. What I can tell you is the catalytic converters that when they're coming in tends to be the motivating factor, I'll say, is probably the drug trends that are out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're trying to look for quick money to feed the habit, the drug habit. Seems to kind of be really, you know, really revolve around that is what it looks like on our end. If I was going to be a guessing man, I'd say you're going to have super two separate crimes. So you'll have the theft here, and then you'll have, you know, a crime of purchasing catalytic converters that there, you have to have specific things that kind of the check marks, right, so to speak, mm-hmm. before you can actually purchase the catalytic converter. So the guys are still looking into that stuff. The detectives are still working hard to really try to tie those loose ends together. I just don't know if we're at that point yet mm-hmm. to make that conclusion.
Well,
I don't believe we're there yet.
In this case, it looks like there were two businesses involved in allegedly purchasing the stolen converters, catalytic converters, CEM Catalytic Converter LLC and PDX Scrap Metal. I'm looking at a release that says neither the people involved who were considered the primary suspects were arrested, and both are cooperating. So I imagine that means mm-hmm. that's how you're getting the people who are stealing them and being able to make arrests.
Yeah, at this point, you know, the investigation, just because, like I said, it's very difficult to prove the actual stolen. I mean, everybody out here, we know that they're stolen, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
You look at them and you can just kind of put piece one and two together. But to actually be able to get to the point of proving that is a whole different step involved.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to piece all the pieces together. Nobody's going to be dodging a bullet on charges here. We just didn't make an actual physical arrest at the point. Just because we're, like I said, we're trying to tie all the loose ends up. The last thing that we want to do is act quickly without having all of our I's dotted and our T's crossed, for sure.
But you are making the point, just to clarify, that the two business people, they knowingly purchased stolen catalytic converters. That's the allegation?
Yeah, that's the allegation at this point, yeah.
Okay, and I say that because, look, there are circumstances, I imagine, depending on the kind of shop you run, that you might end up mm-hmm. unknowingly purchase stolen catalytic converters.
Sure, it's not illegal to purchase them.
Yeah,
it's just at times the manner of how it is purchased.
Yeah, it's illegal to knowingly purchase stolen ones. We're talking with Grant County Sheriff Joe Crete. Sheriff, do you get the sense that the reason why we've seen such an explosion in catalytic converter theft is the light on crime policies and laws that have been passed over the course of the last couple of years? I'm assuming they were stolen prior to 2020, but we certainly never really had any meaningful conversation. Certainly didn't see the surge that we saw over the course of the last 2.5 years.
No, you're exactly right. There are several crimes that are taking a direct impact, you know, especially of us up here, you know, in our rural area that we live here in Grant County. You have so many open areas, the farming community is, mm-hmm. is really taking a huge, huge hit in our community. And you know, they have to have their implements to operate and make their living, right? You know, to provide the goods that we have, not just here in the Washington state, but all through the country. And then when those thieves come in there and they do damage to circles, to stealing catalytic converters, to stealing batteries and things like that, because there's no point and no way to hold people accountable. The biggest problem for us in law enforcement, I would say, is that the big one that we're seeing the most is probably the pursuit law. There's just no accountability. If you just keep driving, you're fine. You don't mm-hmm. have to stop. You know, and that's the hard part for law enforcement. And the thing that I worry about the most, probably in that law that's in effect now, is we've already seen it here in Grant County, where we've had some people in our farming community that have actually pursued these people that are stealing their products. The thing that I worry about the most is we're going to have one of our citizens getting seriously hurt or even killed because we're not, as far as law enforcement, allowed to step in and perform what I believe is our job, not the citizen.
Well, and you're trained. You're deputies. You're trained, and an average person generally is not. I certainly understand their frustration. But the fact of the matter is, and we've been talking about this for a while, whether it's this particular bill or any other, at some point, people are going to push back and fight for themselves if we're mm-hmm. telling them law enforcement won't. And the idea that a deputy in Ephrata or Moses Lake is in exact same position as a deputy in Federal Way or a police officer in Seattle, that's just absolutely absurd. I imagine you mm-hmm. can, in fact, safely engage in pursuits given certain circumstances, but most of the time in this particular district.
You're absolutely right. I've been, you know, doing this now for 30 years, and I've had multiple pursuits in my career and know of many others than mine that have actually ended quite safely. I'm not saying that they're all perfect and you know, things happen. They do. I mean, it just happens, unfortunately. You know, bad things happen. But when you start talking about people putting themselves at risk that are not trained to deal with those situations like we are, people, you're right, people are frustrated, they're mad, they're upset and frustrated that they know law enforcement's hands are tied. They feel like that now they need to step up and perform a job that we typically should be doing. Mm-hmm. And that's just a recipe for disaster. It really is. And that's what I worry about the most, is our community getting injured or seriously, seriously hurt, not worse, by trying to step in and do what they believe is the right thing.
Last question for you. Do you get the sense that there is going to be any shift in thinking in Olympia? There was the glimmer of hope, but it seems like it was all a ruse to potentially not even pass the watered-down version of a bill that would have rescinded this ridiculous law.
Yeah, it is frustrating, and I think you described it pretty good. I think as far as law enforcement, we did have a glimmer of hope. We try to always have a glimmer of hope. You know, I'm a guy that I haven't given up on the process, or I wouldn't have ran for sheriff. You know, I believe that there's still effective ways to do law enforcement. Mm-hmm. We have to do it differently, but I'm okay with that because I'm not willing to give up.
Yeah.
And you know, hopefully that our communities and our citizens aren't willing to give up as well as our legislators. I hope they aren't either. But it is frustrating when you do see a glimmer of hope and it's like, well, you know, maybe there might be some, you know, light on the horizon, and then it just kind of diminishes. And it is. It's frustrating. It definitely is.
Yeah, I can't imagine. It's frustrating as a citizen. So as someone in law enforcement, I can't imagine what it might feel like. We've been talking with Grant County Sheriff Joe Creed. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for your time today.
Of course. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle top radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
So there's a story out of FoxNews.com about the president's first official veto. He made his first official veto today. It had everything to do with something y'all have probably heard about, ESG. No, it is not something you add to food. That is MSG. We're talking about ESG as in environmental, social, and corporate governance. And according to folks on the left, it should be taken into account when the administration is making investment decisions. The folks on the right, and quite a few folks on the left, have said, no, we should not be taking ESG into account because you're basically forcing companies into doing that if they want to see any kind of federal investment. Now, when we say, here's an easy way to address what environmental, social, and corporate governance means. Woke garbage. That's all it means. The very thing that helped contribute to the downfall of Silicon Valley Bank, this wokeness that they've decided to spend so much time and energy on, that would basically be effectively forced upon companies. That means that every company is going to do their DE&I diversity, equity, and inclusion, different initiatives, different affinity groups, and talking about how they're donating money to BLM. It's just a horrible, horrible policy to want to push this on people. So the president made a big deal about the veto, and he posted a video where he just, I mean, he's so sleepy in this.
I just signed this veto because the legislation passed by the Congress would put at risk the retirement savings of individuals across the country. They couldn't take into consideration investments that wouldn't be impacted by climate, impacted by overpaying executives, and that's why I decided to veto it. It makes sense to veto it.
It makes
sense. I just signed this
veto. Stop talking. It makes sense to veto it. Oh, it really does. What did I just sign? Do I put my name on it? Okay. I just vetoed something. This is a ridiculous position. Now, he went on later on in a statement, or really in a tweet, to blame the MAGA Republicans for this particular bill. He said this bill would risk your retirement savings by making it illegal to consider risk factors MAGA House Republicans don't like. Your plan manager should be able to protect your hard-earned savings, whether Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene likes it or not. Man, they are just obsessed with MTG. My God, they just and the funny thing is, I don't think your average person has any clue who she is. You do, I do. We talk about her. People who watch, you know, cable news know who she is, but most people don't watch cable news. Now, specifically, this ended. They say banned. This officially ends enforcement of this new Labor Department rule that urged retirement plan fiduciaries to consider ESG in whatever decision they were making as to how they would, you know, leverage their investment dollars. Under this rule, Fox News says, fiduciaries that make investment decisions for the retirement plans of more than 150 million people would be explicitly permitted under federal guidelines to consider companies' approach to climate change and other social issues instead of focusing on only profitability and return on investment for retirees. So the funny thing is, while Joe Biden tells you that he's doing this to strengthen your future, our future, the truth of the matter is it's quite the opposite. His position tells them you don't have to focus solely on profitability and return on investment. What the Democrats who support ESG, and again, remember, this was a bipartisan bill that moved forward to ban this use, or not, again, not ban its use, but prevent it or not incentivize it. The folks who like this idea are saying they want to spend investment dollars on companies that hold left-wing viewpoints, regardless of whether or not this would be the smart move from a fiscal perspective, as in the ROI on the investment, that you should go for a left-wing company if it's going to deliver you, and I'm just making these numbers up, a 10% ROI versus a company that doesn't focus on the woke garbage but would deliver to you a 14% return on investment, that you should consider the 10% one, go with them because ESG is better for the country. And, you know, he brings up climate change. It really doesn't have to do with the climate change as much as it does all the other woke garbage about gender identity, drag queen story hours, all of those things. Now, Senator Joe Manchin today, he put out a statement just completely ripping into Joe Biden because he was placing his radical social agendas over us, the American people. He wrote, "This administration continues to prioritize their radical policy agenda over the economic, energy, and national security needs of our country. And it's absolutely infuriating. West Virginians are under increasing stress as we continue to recover from a once-in-a-generation pandemic, pay the bills amid record inflation, and face the largest land war in Europe since World War II. The administration's unrelenting campaign to advance a radical social and environmental agenda is only exacerbating these challenges." And that last part, I think, is important to note. It's exacerbating issues that currently exist. He's making it worse. Democrats that support this ESG garbage, they are making the situation worse. So now it goes back to the Congress, where it's unlikely to receive a two-thirds majority support in order to overcome this veto. So that means, unless there is a major shift in thinking from the Democrats, and there's no reason to believe that there has been, the veto effectively killed this piece of legislation that did have bipartisan support. And we're all going to suffer. Those of us who are of retirement age would suffer more probably. But all of us eventually will suffer at least a little bit, at least in the short term. Hopefully we get a president in power who either Trump or DeSantis, I'll take almost any Republican, who can help undo this nonsense. Assuming the Congress stays where it is right now, they can just do the bill again, or hopefully we have control of Congress. But I just want you to think about a company, any company, you can pick the company, that has explicitly leaned into the woke stuff and has done better as a result. And I'm not talking about companies that previously did it before we called it woke. For example, Nike has always done this kind of thing. They've always done it. Locally, REI has always done it. Right. Just the environment, because that's what they're built around, like their support as a brand around the environment. And by the way, they're not doing so well right now. But think of a company that after BLM decided to adopt the far left social justice issues because they felt either pressure from the BLM movement or because they felt more comfortable being open about it. Tell me the companies that have succeeded in that strategy. I'd love to know some success stories, because at best, I think you'll see that it did nothing. At worst, it hurt. But I don't think you can say at best it actually helped any of these companies. It got them some brand recognition, I guess. But brand recognition doesn't always convert into new customers. And dare I say, the folks who make these demands that if you don't do this, I'll never buy your product, they aren't in the market for your product to begin with. And there are companies that fall for that nonsense and they think it's going to deliver them market share when it obviously won't. And it doesn't. So this is not a good decision by this White House. I'm glad to see some Democrats push back, but unfortunately, it's not going to be enough to overcome this veto. You're listening to The Jason Rance Show.